The Normal Town Council, like much of America, is discussing police and race. The council last night heard a report from a subgroup of the committee that developed the town's 2040 vision plan back in November. Group members said they knew there was more work to do, and they've been meeting since January with Police Chief Rick Bleichner to develop recommendations they hope the town will adopt in some fashion to fight racism and improve community policing. In the studio is Town of Normal Mayor Chris Koos, who joins us most Tuesdays following Monday evening council meetings. He's joined by the CEO of the YWCA of McLean County and subgroup co-chair Dante Lotson. Thanks to both of you for joining us on Sound Ideas today. We appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
I know people in my position are supposed to be fair and balanced and unbiased, but last night's discussion made me proud to be a resident of this community. Mayor Koos, what was your reaction?
I thought the presentation and the work that this subgroup had done, very tough work, was exemplary. And the notion of grabbing somebody else's model, putting a stamp on it, and say, now this is the town of Normal, did not happen. What they talked about was culture change. And that's harder, but that's what gets things done.
There are essentially five recommendations, including one for a community police and culture board. We'll get to all of that in a moment. But first, Dante, tell me about the process and the meetings, which I guess were uncomfortable, filled with frank discussion, but ultimately productive.
Yes, I think the process was a really good example of what can happen when we're being very honest about facing the realities that we're dealing with here, not only in the country and some of what we see happening nationally, but right here, even in our own backyards. And that was a perfect way to level set, and I'm going to continue to give a ton of credit to the town of Normal and the leadership, starting with, my good friend right here to my right, Mayor Koos, as well as our longtime city manager, Mark Peterson, and the chief, Rick Bleichner. They all stepped in. And what I want to say about the process itself and what allowed us to get further down the road was that I think it had to be the very first conversation. We were talking and everyone was there listening, and I can say that you could probably count the number of words said by these city officials. They were there to truly listen and learn, and as a result, I think we came out with a very good, strong product. And I also want to thank the folks who were there each month, spending their time to make this right, and just a very strong, positive experience.
Tell me about working with the Normal Police Department since January on this difficult topic.
Mm-hmm. So I would have to say that I was pleasantly surprised to work with Chief Bleichner, and the way that this happened. And once again, I have to give him credit, because it would have been very easy to bring in a significant number of law enforcement officials. The potential problem with that is that there is a real power gradient, right, between your traditional or your average community member and someone who has the power, authority, carries a gun, and who has the full weight and law of the United States Constitution behind them. That can be somewhat daunting. So Rick knew the value and importance of listening, hearing what was said, and then working with the community members and determining the best way to come back and share that with his team. But we knew we needed to be careful about that. And I also want to be clear about this. While Rick did that, there were also members of this group who did, in essence, did the same. We didn't go out to members, let's say, of the alliance that took place over in Bloomington or other groups. What we did is we said, hey, we're having these conversations. We were very limited with the details, because we knew that they still needed to be worked out. And sometimes you've got to huddle up to figure out what you're going to use a football analogy now that football is upon us. You huddle up, you develop a play, and then you go out to execute that play. And I think right now we're in that phase where we're about ready to break the huddle and to talk about what the next steps are.
Chris, this is an outgrowth of the town's 2040 vision plan. Can you remind people of this plan and a little bit about what's in it?
The 2040 vision plan kind of went along with our update of our comprehensive plan. And every 5 years, we assemble a group of people to take a deep dive in what they think our community would or should look like in 25 years. And that's a tough thing to do, that kind of futurism, the futuristic visioning. This year, I decided that I wanted the most diverse group of people that I could assemble to do this, and that includes ethnicity, socioeconomic, and age. And I think I accomplished some of that. That we got a different faces at the table, and what they come up with, the product they've come up with, talks about all facets of the community, economic development, education, environment.
A dozen or so core values.
Oh, absolutely.
So one of those core values, Dante, and specifically what you're working on, is the report you delivered last night has a deep connection to the fourth core value in the vision, social equity. Can you talk a little bit about that and the connection to what you were working on with this subgroup and that core value?
Sure. So social equity is very important, and we know that throughout the community, when you hear people talk about the opportunities, their experiences, their quality of life, there are certain segments of our community where that is just simply not a very positive experience. And for us, we knew that we could deliver a document and be the culmination of the original 2040 doc, and we could move on with some very limited recommendations, or we could step up, answer the challenge of what, in terms of what we're facing as a nation and what we see trickling down here at the local level. And we knew we needed to really, that it deserved its own space and time for us to grapple with the very difficult issues and matters that face us. So We didn't want to leave that to chance. We all do this work because we love it, and we knew that Normal, given the strong leadership courage and what they've done and how they have really grown as a town and how progressive they are, that they would be game for this. And turns out that it looks like it's going to be very positive.
Off the top, yesterday you warned that some people in the community might have a negative reaction to this subgroup's work. Councilmember Jeff Fritzen argued, or rather agreed, and said it would be wrong to be dismissive of your work. Tell me what you think some of the negative reaction might look like, and have you seen any yet?
So I haven't seen any yet, but then again, I'm not a very big social media person. I slack in that, and Christy Germanis.
That might be a good thing.
Yeah, it probably is, exactly. But, you know, I think we'll hear a lot of what we've heard in terms of what we see at the national level. That national narrative is that this is somehow anti-police. It's unfair. Perhaps police are now the victims, and it really makes no sense. And let me tell you why. People will say that this is anti-American, and I would say no. It's the exact opposite. This is about as American as you can get. American as apple pie, because it is a true, clear act of democracy, right? And also, we know, and as it was shared yesterday, the CALEA designation, which is not easy to obtain, 8 times. So you look at it, and
that's an accreditation process for the Town of Normal Police Department.
Right, that's
or any police department.
Yeah. And so you look at it and you say, are we okay with continuing this course when we know that there are issues? So I think we're challenged. So for folks who might have an interest or they have opposition to it, I would encourage you to challenge yourself, right? I mean, do we want to be the America that says we want to be number one in everything? Well, to be number one, that means that requires you to push yourself. And then it also requires others around you to be very real and honest and to care enough about you to be honest to say, hey, here are some opportunities for improvement. So the option is we either ignore it, as we have as a nation in many ways, or we step up to the challenge to say, yeah, we're good, but darn it, we want to get to great. We want to be the best that we can be.
How much did events like what happened in Charlottesville and going back from that influence the desire to do more since November when the 2040 report was delivered?
So, you know, I would say it depends on your experience. If you are not a person of color, if you are not trans, if you have not identified with the groups that have been targeted, I think it was sort of a wake-up call to many people. But for people who experience these atrocities day in and day out, or many micro assaults, it's the way of the world, right? I mean, we get this, we live it, and we see it every day. So there are absolutely no surprises to us. Now, what we hope to accomplish moving forward is that it should not have to take the death of someone in order to wake up and say, oh, yeah, well, gosh, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe they have a point. So here's the deal. Instead of having strong opposition to the process, ask how you can be involved. And do yourself and the community a big favor. Become involved. Open your ears so that you will no longer have to walk around the community with your eyes wide shut. You need to see what the reality is. And when people talk to you, assume good faith. Understand that you may not completely get it because you don't live it. But that's more reason for you to listen. So I see this as being a very positive thing. And I think the time, you know, it's run its compass. The time has run its compass where we just sit back, we listen, and we just hope that by ignoring it, that it eventually sort of self-corrects or goes away. It doesn't. The issues.
It hasn't.
That's right.
Just look at history.
That's right. I mean, we're talking centuries here. Yeah,
sure.
It hasn't. There have been some improvements along the way. But you know what? If you're a part of one of those groups, you don't want to see improvement. You know,
you want it fixed.
That's right. Yeah. And you want to see fairness and equity across the board.
Sure.
And it makes no sense whatsoever to think, well, hey, we've come a long way. We just need to wait. No. Waiting, it's too long. We need to do something about it right now.
It's Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy in the studio with the co-chair of a town committee examining social equity, police, and race, Dante Lotson, and Town of Normal Mayor Chris Koos. Let's touch on these five recommendations. Normal City Manager Mark Peterson said the report delivered last night is the first step of a 1,000-mile journey, so we're at the beginning here. Chris, it sounds like the council would be likely involved in the first recommendation, which is moving forward with a public process. This subgroup has been meeting privately for the last 7 months.
That's right, and it is time for this to go public, and it's time to get these seven or eight people some help. You know, let's get a broader community voice behind what we're trying to accomplish here. So that will be probably the first next step.
And recommendation number two, data gathering about how the police interact with the community. Dante, why is data gathering important?
It's important because for a number of people that do not experience it, they don't feel as comfortable with the anecdotal or hearing stories, and understand that for people who are in very strong opposition, there is often is the case that they don't experience people who are very different from them. So to be able to have some empirical backing makes a lot of sense, and it validates it. To me, it's good, but it's also sad that we have to see something live in front of us, or it has to happen to someone who looks like us in order to wake up. But with the data, it just lends even more credence to the process.
Dante, what do you want to say about the third recommendation, community culture change as it concerns policing and law enforcement? You said last night it's not the police's role solely to define what community policing looks like.
That's right. And, you know, it's also not fair. It's not fair for them to expect. I mean,
not fair to the police.
Not fair to the police. It's not fair to the community. So many of these brave men and women who don a uniform and they go and they take this very seriously, they have a certain culture that they come up within. And it doesn't necessarily speak to community the way that we need it to. So that's when the police, and once again, thanks to Rick, they have to have the foresight and to humble themselves to say, you know, hey, we're not the experts here. I mean, we have community members and people who are out here who are charged with such activities and moving the community forward. Perhaps we're so much better off if we come together. So that's the importance of working through this as a collective and not just having something come out of the wheelhouse as police. And also, if it comes exclusively from the police, then we need to accept whatever comes out of it. So we need to be involved, and we need to be involved on the front end. And the last piece I'll say about that is that while I am very happy to serve and I'm honored, when I first moved to the town of Normal, I told the mayor, I said, you let me know what you need. I am here to serve. But it can't just be folks like me who are middle class. I mean, we need to get to the average Joe and Jane six packs. We need to get to folks who are underemployed. We need to get to folks who have had very difficult experiences with police. And we also need to have those who are naysayers of the process to come in, as I mentioned before, but
create that buy-in.
Yeah.
Recommendations 4 and 5, police community relations board, similar to what Bloomington has created, or something different, a community police and culture board. What is the difference, Dante?
So to me, it is, you know, we talked about this quite a bit in our subgroup, right? It's you can have people who are really good-hearted, well-intentioned people, but it's not about the intent, it's about the impact, right? So you can come into a situation, and because the system has its, I mean, when you look at racism, it is permeable, right? Throughout our society, if not ubiquitous. So with that being said, they're going to unintentionally be following policies and procedures that will create even more disparate outcomes. So it's really about having conversations where we are talking about changing the culture. Like, what does it look for police to, what does it look like for the police? Like, the police are often hailed as heroes, but that's from certain segments of the community. What we desire from this is that everybody to have that experience. So when police come around, we don't feel the need to run away because we might get locked up for calling the police. But instead, we know each other on a first name basis. We feel very comfortable. And one thing I want to touch on that you mentioned, Mike, is that we don't want to create buy-in. We start with buy-in. But what we ultimately want is to create owners so that when Rick steps away from the job, that and someone steps in, it's not going to be the leadership per se, but it's going to be the officers, the rank and file, saying, hey, guy, we don't do business like that here. This is how we do business. This is how we treat one another. So that happens only when there's ownership. So we start with getting people to buy in, but we ultimately come to a place of owners.
Chris, you praised this process. How are you leaning toward this group's recommendation for the Community Police and Culture Board?
Well, you know, the initial recommendation is very strong, and the work that they did was very frank and honest, and they asked each other tough questions. But going forward is where the proof in the pudding is, mm-hmm. if you will. What we're going to do with this is really what we need to be looking at. You know, I can't begin to thank the group enough for the work that they did, and the fact that they, in the last weeks of doing this, they said, we can't pull something off the shelf and say, here you go, do that. And they actually have created something new in terms of a process.
So that sounds like to me the bullseye for you is this Community Police and Culture Board.
It's a focal point, not a bullseye.
Okay. I want to hear your reaction, both of your reactions, to City Manager Mark Peterson's statement about racism in our community. You said it was permeable. I was going to say pervasive. I think he said pervasive. And that means there's racism in our police department. I thought that was a really strong statement to come from the city manager. And of course, he's walking a line. There was lots of praise heaped on the police department as well, and individual officers, and the fact that they do a dangerous job. But if racism is everywhere, then it is in the police department. I want your reaction to what Mark said.
Well, without a pun being intended, racism is not black and white. Racism can be very overt and very aggressive, or it can be a subconscious or unconscious part of a culture. And I think that's what Mark was referring to. You know, in today's world, when people call someone out for racism, it's the worst possible thing.
Well, Mark, Chris, we're having technical difficulties with your microphone, so I may have you swing that one over and lean over for a step. For some reason, the microphone has shut off, so we want to continue this conversation for a little bit longer. And Dante, the same question for you as well. if racism is pervasive in our community, then it is in the police department. And this is a reason that Mark Peterson said the police department should be ground zero for fighting racism.
Yeah, I agree. And we know, I think that the reason he talked about the good work, because we have good officers, right? And they do good work. And we know that that is why there are some people who come out in such strong opposition, and I understand that. But they don't understand that there is a completely different experience by others that they may not come in contact with. So, but I think the manager's intentions, it was really to point out that this is the result of systems, right? So when you feel a certain way about a group of people, what it means is that the system that's in place is working, because you're supposed to think that. I often use the example, I mean, just a bit of self-deprecation. The system has worked pretty darn well on me too, because if I am on the road and there's someone who who's going under the speed limit, let's say in the left lane, and that is one of my pet peeves, the first thing that comes to mind, despite running a women's organization, is what is she doing? Why is she driving that way? Even if I don't vocalize that, that's because it's been embedded in the way that I'm supposed to think. So I think that officers who do their jobs, what they're doing, they are doing their jobs as it's written. But now we have an opportunity to make sure that we are being sensitive to cultural issues, to cultural differences.
So everyone has biases. Everyone has a certain degree of racism, maybe even. It's about recognizing that and keeping it in check.
Well, we certainly all have biases. And what I would say about racism, the ill of racism, is that when you talk about it from a systematic standpoint, you're talking about real power within systems that can impact someone's life. So that is why it's a really good starting point to start within law enforcement, because some of those decisions that are made, we know that once we hear the moniker all the time, you do the crime, you do the time. Okay, I don't know that I argue with that. But once you do the time, it's as if you are released and you're starting a second bid of time, because you never quite lose that scarlet mark. So if decisions are going to be made that are going to have such a permanent mark on that individual, we want to make sure we get that right.
It sounds like some great groundwork has already taken place with Police Chief Bleichner and some officers. Moving forward with everything on the table without making officers and the chief feel like they're under attack, that's already happening, you think, Chris?
No, I don't think so.
So there's still work to be done there.
Before this was rolled out to the public, Mark and Rick met with the command staff, the Normal Police Department, and kind of went over what they saw was going to come out of this recommendation and where it was going. And the command staff was enthusiastic about it. Mm. They realized that there was work that needed to be done, and they were going to be proactive about it and enthusiastically embraced it.
And Chief Bleichner talked about the timing of this effort, that the town is not in a reactionary mode and maybe can avoid ever having to be in a reactionary mode, avoid that national headline. How important is timing in this process, Dante?
I think it's very important. I mean, that shows the strong leadership. I think for us, it's really twofold. So the timing for people of color, for trans folks, for women and groups that have been targeted, it always feels like it's a day short, because these things have always happened. They're just being televised. However, you know, we're not going to lament on that. Here's an opportunity before us now, and I think it does say a lot about the leadership that they're willing to have these discussions absent a very significant event that's, let's say, gone viral. They're willing to do the hard work. And by doing that, then maybe once we have an opportunity to get ahead of the eight ball instead of chasing it.
And Dante, let's talk about these times just for a moment. We're running short on time here, but what's going on in our country? You said these things have always been going on. Is it the fact that they're televised now, that there are police body cams and we have dash cams, or are we backsliding in terms of racial relations and the relation of the police with the African-American community?
So I think they've always happened, and I feel confident in saying that because I grew up in this skin. I live in this skin every day, and I know what I experienced as a child, as a young adult, and as an adult. And so I don't think it's necessarily happening more. I think we've got to be cautious because what we do is that for opponents of reconciliation or groups coming together, they will often say things like, it's, you know, you're anti-police, but it's not a binary. It's not that simple. You know, the people that we love and care about and we hold in high esteem, we expect the absolute best from them. So we hope that the police will see this as an opportunity to partner with us to say, well, they're not complaining. What they're doing is saying, hey, grab our hand. Let's work together. How do we work through some of these very tough issues that we're uncertain about? And at the same time, sharing with the community some of the issues that we have to grapple with.
Okay, Dante Lotson, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas. Mayor Kuss, thank you. Thank you as well. We appreciate it. Chris Kuss is the mayor of the town of Normal. Dante Lotson is the CEO of the YWCA of McLean County. Lotson helped develop and deliver a report on race and police to the Normal Town Council last night. You can see that report at WGLT.org.